What's the craziest thing you've seen in a home inspection? I want to hear about some crazy
Well, the craziest was someone had perished in the house and was there for a hot minute. They weren't there when I got there.
Oh, my God.
But you knew where they were.
Oh.
You know where they had been laying there for a bit. It was sad.
Boy,
it was really sad because nobody was paying attention to that person. And, and so anyway.
I think the craziest thing I saw, we'll keep it PG today, but this was like 2011 and I was showing houses in Manayunk to an investor. And this was like when bank owned properties were really rampant and people were squatting. And I'm in this like cute dress and I'm trying to impress this client. I just had started this, you know, new career. And I walk in and I am like, it's like wet inside. There's f-ing trash up to my knees and literally like out of this trash filled room pops out a dude named Joe who fully announces himself and he is butt ass naked. And I am with like a crew of like men, like they are like investors from New York that are going to tap into Philly. Right. And they've like entrusted me to help them. And I'm like, do you guys like it?
What do you think, Joe? So what can you tell us about the house?
Do you guys buy it? I think Joe comes with the property. Like, cool. What's up, everybody? Here, I forget what episode this is, but we're hosting Open House with Steph. And I've got an amazing guest and one of my truly good friends at this point, Bill Dare with Spotlight Home Inspection. And I'm just pumped to have you on because you're a wealth of knowledge. You've done inspections for hundreds of my clients, I think, at this point, including my family members who are my toughest clients.
Aren't they all?
But anyway, I would love to just dive in here and talk about the hoopla of home inspections and educate people and make sure we're covering some good stuff. So why don't you just start with what the heck is a home inspection?
Hey, that's a great question.
It's a really good.
Like, I think it's really seriously misunderstood.
It is a lot of times. Really misunderstood. You know,
so
what can people expect?
So the state of Pennsylvania has a really good home inspection law that outlines what it is we're supposed to be doing. And it says that we're doing a visual inspection to identify what they classify as material defects, which is anything in a house that's expensive to fix. I wish they did a percentage, like the expensive to fix. The guy buying a $16 million house is less worried about a $500 problem than the single mom buying a $175 house.
Yes.
$175,000 house.
Probably.
So to me, it's a sliding scale.
Right.
So on your stereotypical $500,000, $800,000 house, I think $2,500 is a good kind of line in the sand. If it's more than $2,500 to fix it, I'll consider it a material defect. On a more expensive house, we may raise that number to $5,000 or $10,000.
So to break it down, the state of Pennsylvania has some requirements for you.
Right.
This comes with like what you're required to have as a license, your education hours, all that stuff, but also these guidelines as to like what you are supposed to be looking for. And that's a material defect that has a value to it.
Well, so the state doesn't require us to have a license, which is mildly annoying.
What?
Yes. No, we're not licensed.
What?
So there's criteria that we're supposed to meet. We have to be a member in good standing of one of the national organizations, which they have ongoing education requirements.
Okay.
But there is no licensing requirement for a home inspector in the state of PA. There is in New Jersey and Delaware.
Okay.
I don't know that it's great either way, but...
So what are the requirements to be a home inspector in Pennsylvania?
So in Pennsylvania, you have to have done 100 supervised inspections, like under the coattails of another inspector. So
okay.
You literally have to have gone on 100 inspections with a certified or registered inspector, and you have to pass a national home inspector exam, which isn't overly easy, and you have to do ongoing continuing education credits. So there's two major organizations out there for home inspectors, which is ASHI, the American Society of Home Inspectors, and InterNACHI, which is the other one. And both of those, you have to be a member. I'm a member of both. You have to be a member of one at least, and you have to fulfill all the requirements, which is, well, it used to be ASHI was 250 inspections, and then InterNACHI, or before that was NAHI, was an organization, and they allowed you to get in at 100. So it was difficult to get in years ago because you had to be a member of ASHI, you had to do 250 inspections, and you're not making any money doing those, right? We literally, had to pay.
And how long does it, do you think it takes for people to get, let's just say 100 hours?
100 inspections.
100 inspections?
Yeah, it's not even 100 hours. It's 100, because you've got multiple hours per inspection.
Right.
I mean, I was doing it full time. I was fortunate. My wife had a job, and so I just literally did it. It took me 4 months. But most guys takes like at least a year.
That's wild.
And you're paying $40, $50 an inspection for the guy to let you ride along and talk to you about it.
Sure.
So it's not a low bar, but there is no licensing per se.
Well, that makes sense. That at least, you know, there's a requirement and there's a test to pass.
Yeah.
Okay, going back to what can a buyer expect from a home inspection?
So let's finish out the material defect.
Great idea.
So the money is one piece. And then the other thing is that a unreasonable risk, which again is a lawyer term. The words unreasonable and significant are two terms that they put in there that make it a little bit challenging sometimes.
Unreasonable risk. I don't know if I've like heard this.
Okay, so this is in the state home inspection law. It's in one of every report that you've ever seen of mine. If you read the whole entire thing cover to cover.
Well, normally it's a little more broken down. It's the way that I like to explain it is you're going to get a really comprehensive report, and the real understanding is to understand what's currently functioning, what is currently defective, and what's going to be on your like 10-year down the road list and 1-year road list.
Right.
To really be able to understand. But what is the term?
Or the 2-month road list.
Or, you know,
we have to take care of immediately.
Immediately, so, before you move into the house. Absolutely.
Sure. And then who's going into the house dictates some of that, too. If I have little children moving in, you know, my handrail comments and things like that are much more important than if, you or I are moving into a house.
Well, I don't know what the word is that I'm looking for here, but there's a baseline of how every home inspector should be evaluating a house, regardless of who's buying it, right?
Right, but the material defect is the same, but the commentary, how you couch it on site, may be slightly different.
Sure.
We can have a lot of influence in the way that people feel about the problems that we encounter as we, you know, as we go through the house.
Right.
So as we look at material defects, we need to define them in the report. It should say it as a material defect right in the report, according to state law. Mm-hmm. And so if it's unsafe, so for example, a handrail that's missing or loose to me is an unreasonable risk. GFCIs, smoke detectors, all these things are unreasonable risk and fairly, low cost to deal with.
And unreasonable meaning like, come on, it's so easy, let's just fix it sort of thing?
Well, you get the conversation like, okay, so you don't have lightning rods on the roof, right? So if lightning struck the house, you could burn the house to the ground. I don't think that's an unreasonable risk, right? It's a risk and we could talk about it, but it's not an unreasonable risk that the house doesn't have, for example, lightning rods.
Got it. Understood. Okay. I think that makes sense. Yeah.
So that's the material. So when you break the report down, you're talking, or a home inspection down, we're actually looking at what's really dangerous or expensive to fix that's broken, right?
Yes.
The state never designed the home inspection industry to go in and nitpick a house, right? We're supposed to be looking, we call it elephants, not squirrels. We're looking for big stuff that's going to be a problem that's going to cost money or put somebody at risk.
Or is going to change the way that someone would safely live in their home. And I always say to my buyers, and maybe you agree with this or have a different perception of it, but when you walk through the house as a consumer and you're with me and we're excited and we're going and we're torn and we're doing our thing, there's only so much you know about a property, right?
Right.
You don't know how to inspect the electrical panel. I'm dangerous enough and I know how to look for, you know, the code and the whatever is in the actual box if it's been renovated recently. But none of us are experts, so we're really leaning on you guys. And that's really the opportunity for a buyer to say, okay, I'm making an offer on this property based off of the seller's property disclosure in Pennsylvania. It's a disclosure state. And what they say about the house. And then you come in and you help supplement additional information.
Right.
That's usually how I like to think about it and explain it to my clients. And sometimes you uncover some big stuff, but it's for the people in the back. A home inspection is not to be like, nah, I don't really like this style of faucet.
Right.
Or maybe they should just do this while they're here. Like, that's not how it works. It's, can you live here safely?
Right. What is going to be your experience when you move in from a standpoint of repairs and understanding of things? And I'll be honest, most of the time we see the things that we find on a home inspection, the current owner isn't even aware of.
Right.
So it's pretty amazing to me when you're pointing this out. We do a lot of pre-listing inspections. So people that are getting ready to sell their house, we inspect it for them. And they're blown away by the stuff that we're talking about.
That's so interesting.
A good home inspector is not only going to give you this data, but help you process it, right?
Yes. And that's why I love working with you. It's because you do the step that is the most overwhelming for people is you get this crazy ass report and you're like, I just paid a guy like $1,000 to come and tell me my house is going to fall down. And then I'm like, no, just settle down. Let's talk to Bill.
Right. A good home inspector should always be available after the fact to go on a call. And also, you know, you really should extend your home inspection. If you will get much more out of it if you attend it and stick with the inspector, because there's lots of things that they're going to tell you about the house. And not only things that are wrong with it, but things that are right with it and things that are good and maintenance requirements and all this stuff is fair game at a good home inspection. So, you know, a good inspector is going to, it's an education about the house. It's not only finding what's wrong, because that's the easy part, right? Mm-hmm. Going and picking a house apart is pretty straightforward for us. It's unusual for me to see something in a house I haven't seen a dozen times before in that month. Although we did see a gas pump bolted to the sidewalk on a house the other day. And that was the first one of those I'd ever seen. Yeah, that was interesting. I was trying to find a tank, but that's a whole nother thing.
Sounds like a nice little DIY project.
No, it was old. It was very old.
Whoops.
So anyway, but I think that the home inspection process is misunderstood in that we can't see through walls. We can't predict the future.
Yeah.
We are not going to be able to find every last little thing that's wrong with that house in the course of 2 hours. The inspection has to be reasonably priced. I could do a heck of an inspection for about $4,000 or $5,000 on a regular house if I could bring in an electrician. We'll have an electrician evaluate the panel. So it's designed to be more of a, let's make sure the house is structurally sound to the best of our ability. Let's make sure there's no serious environmental issues like mold or asbestos or lead-based paint and things like that. And let's make sure that I'm going to be able to move in here, to your point, use the house the way I thought I could use it without a lot of drama.
Yeah. I mean, you just said so many really awesome things. Let's talk about what's the best practice for a buyer when they are hiring you to do a home inspection?
Well, in general, hiring a home inspector should be a little bit of a process. Remember, you're putting an awful lot of faith into that company or that person. So you want to make sure that you want to see a copy of the report, a sample report from them. You want to know that it's what's called a narrative report where you can like read through it. I saw one recently that had smiley faces or frowny faces. If it wasn't happy about something, it was a frowny face. And you know, that seemed kind of ridiculous to me. It was too rudimentary. So I think that finding out that your home inspector, how long is, I stopped counting at 10,000.
Right.
How many have you done? Is this your fifth year in business or is this your fifth month in business?
Right. That's
and I don't want to be, I mean, we were all beginners at some point.
Sure.
But I don't necessarily think that I want to be the guy that finishes the training process on somebody. So find out how long they've been doing it. Mm-hmm. They should be able to tell you about how many inspections they've done. I think once you hit 1,000 or more, you're pretty good. None of my guys have done less than thousands of inspections.
That's right.
I think that that's important. I think having a brief conversation with the person and quizzing them, is it okay if I follow you around? Is it okay if I ask questions? And if you're getting any pushback on that kind of thing, then you want to find somebody else. We want you to be involved in the conversation. And I'm upset when my client walks away from me at an inspection. I'm like, whoa, where are you going? Come on back here.
Sometimes I distract them.
Shiny things.
Yes, of course.
It's true. I wouldn't inspect my own house. If I was buying a house tomorrow, I would not inspect it. Because as buyers, we look through things with very different eyes.
Right.
You know, we see it as an inspector. I don't care what the countertops are made of.
Right.
I don't care if the bathroom is remodeled or not.
Right.
I only care about those things that really affect the ownership. So,
one thing that my clients ask me is, do I need to take notes? And I say to them, you know, if you feel like you want to, no problem. But what is your take on that?
I think it's distracting for the client when they're doing it. I think that if a home inspector is doing his job, everything that they need to know is going to be in a report.
Absolutely.
Or in a supplemental email. So sometimes people are going to do some projects in the house and they want to know more about it. And I think that's fair game on a home inspection. So, for example, they're going to put a deck on the house after they move in. And, we may have some commentary on how that can happen better than not better.
Yeah.
Not better is that a
whatever.
Better than
today
no.
It is. It's fine.
So I think that, you know, you could send an email to the home inspector. Hey, you told me about these ideas on a deck, and get it in a supplemental email and all that. And I think that's one of the biggest, leading into a conversation about one of the biggest shortcomings of the way people use a home inspector. We want to be your resource going forward.
Yes.
Right. Don't call me up, you know, 7 months later and say, hey, I just had the heater replaced and the guy said you didn't, you know, find this or find that. Call me first.
You guys can't predict the future and you can't see behind a wall, right? Like, there's only so much you can do. But one of the best things that you say to my clients that I appreciate as a professional is that the home inspection is the start of a relationship, not the end of a relationship.
Right.
This is not a one day relationship.
Absolutely.
This is a great way to document your house at a point in time. And if you do have an issue, you should be the first call because you have a point of reference.
And I'm not trying to sell you anything.
Right.
I don't make repairs. The state of Pennsylvania precludes us from even working on a house that we've inspected for 12 months. I don't, you know, you can, normally in a home inspection, I show people my hands and my wife will tell you I do nothing. So I don't make any repairs. We're not trying to sell you roof, right?
Right.
So it's a matter of lean on your inspector. He should be, anyway, an unbiased resource for
right.
you. And so we do a ton of plan reviews and look at, like, when a contractor goes in to do something. I'm not against looking at that and saying that I think that this sounds a little bit overreached. Maybe we should bring in another contractor to review this or give us another quote. Or I don't like this process.
Right.
Because nobody's seen more houses than your home inspector if he's been doing it for a while.
Yeah.
So I think that using a home inspector to vet contractors, to vet processes, and to say, you know, we're getting a new roof put on. What do you think? Well, they're not going to remove the old roof. That's not a go.
Right.
Right. Get the old roof off of there. Things like that.
And I think that everybody has a different way that they operate. Like, there's state regulations, there's municipal requirements, there's code, there are all these best practices, and everybody has a rendition of it. And I think at the end of the day, I firmly believe that my job is to give people a lot of information so they can make the best decision for themselves. And as soon as I'm out of that equation, I'm always getting the phone call. Hey, do you have a good recommendation for this and this and this? And anytime someone's like, hey, I want to make this change, I always say you should always feel free to reach out to Bill. And I think what's also important to know, too, is some of these contractors are really quick to come back and point the finger at, well, the city inspector should have done this, or the township guy should have done this, or all these things should have occurred, or, of course, the home inspector. And it can get really challenging and frustrating, and there's many different ways that you can go about a process. But one thing that I think is really fascinating and is one of the main reasons why I have so much confidence in you for my clients is that you have a different arm of your business. You have a home inspection company, but you also have a third party building oversight inspection company. Can you tell me more about that?
Sure.
For the people in the back.
Spotlight Building Science. So we got into, it comes from basically messing a lot of things up and figuring out that you did and figuring out how to fix it. And then once you get good at fixing it, other people realize that you figured out how to fix it. So it stemmed a lot from the stucco issues and the building envelope issues that really were seriously problematic about in the last 15 or 20 years.
Right.
So, you know, you get tapped by Penn State because you've got more pictures than anybody.
Like Penn State reached out to you. When was this?
So the Engineering School of Penn State has an outreach program called the PHRC, the Pennsylvania Housing Research Center.
This is so fascinating.
And so they were attempting to get a grip on developing an 8-hour course for architects, engineers, building officials, home inspectors, contractors, whoever.
Okay.
To identify what was going wrong with all these problems with water getting behind siding and creating all this damage and mold and wood rot. And I don't know exactly where Brian got my name. He's moved on now, but he was there. Brian Wolfgang was the big cheese in the engineering department and the head of the PHRC. So he said, hey, I heard you have more pictures than anyone. So I said, well, sure. Well, let's go. So I helped him write this 8-hour course that I taught for them a number of times on stucco failures and flashing. And I've taught several classes for them since about the new flashing issues and things that came along like that. But so that was really how Spotlight Building Science became part of the equation, because if you send your resume off to somebody, an engineer, and they're like, well, what are you sending me a home inspector for? Right. They don't want to talk. Everybody has this in the profession. Everybody has this idea that a home inspector is like the bottom of the barrel. And I believe that there probably are some guys like that, but for the most part, a good home inspector knocks it out of the park more often than not. But so in order to avoid that kind of conflict, I created this other company. But what I will say about when we got into this first part of this conversation is No contractor ever thought the last contractor did anything right. Right.
That's a really good one.
And so you have to understand that their job is to sell you their service. And some of them are great at it. And some of them are really honest about it. And some of them aren't so honest about it. And we See about those guys getting arrested and all kinds of nifty things happening. But the gatekeeper for all of that, for you as one of our customers, and even really not one of our customers, is your home inspector. Call them up. Say, hey, have you heard of this contractor? This is what they're trying to sell me. I can't help you after you gave the guy $24,000 to put a window in.
Right.
There's nothing I can do for you now, or you signed the contract.
Right.
But if you bring it to us ahead of time, and again, I'm not saying this is only Spotlight's place in the world. There's Other people doing this.
Sure.
I think that there's a logic to saying, I need an independent party that's not interested in trying to sell me a new roof. I just want to know, do I need a new roof?
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is that most of the roofs that I see replaced didn't need to be replaced.
Yeah.
Roofs don't leak on roofing. They typically leak at the penetration. Mm-hmm. So, I'm a cheap guy. I want my roof to last as long as it can humanly last. So if I can fix a roof for $400 or $500 and get another 5 or 10 years out of it, I'm going there.
Yeah.
Going there.
Very cool. So, okay. Let's talk about how the industry has changed for home inspections. Take it away.
Okay. So it has the industry in... So the home inspection industry is tied directly to the real estate industry. Clearly, we wouldn't exist without real estate agents and whatnot. So I think that the industry has changed in a couple of ways. There's two pieces to this puzzle we want to talk about, I suspect. So one is, what is the consumer dealing with out there when they're buying a house, and how is the relationship between the home buyer and the home inspection industry changed? And that has become very problematic in the last couple of years with this whole notion that somehow we need to waive the inspection to get this under contract. And it's a legitimate concern. I mean, you've dealt with it, I know for a fact, and a lot of our clients have dealt with it.
Yeah.
They're doing inspections, they're making offers on 5, 6, 7 houses and not getting them.
Right.
And not until they drop the inspection. So that's become a real challenge. Now, on the Spotlight building science side of thing, it's wonderful. The lawsuits between buyers and sellers is skyrocketing, in which I'm an expert witness in a lot of that, defending buyers and sellers in this problematic transaction where the buyer bought the house, waived all inspections, and didn't understand what they were buying. And now they're going to, whether it's legitimate or not, now they're going to go after it. So that has changed how this industry, our industry, we're off by 70% on the home inspection side.
That's crazy.
So
we're also down like almost 2 million units in sales.
Yeah, no, it's
from
a whole
2021 to 2024.
It's been challenging.
Yeah.
It has been challenging. So the waiving inspection, so I believe it's Massachusetts just passed a law that says that you cannot do that. You cannot force somebody or ask somebody to waive inspections. My understanding is it's going through all their steps, but it got passed. So we're hoping that that kind of spreads.
Because that's interesting.
I think that everybody should have the right to have an inspection. You having to pay $800-$900-$2 million for a house and you can't inspect it is crazy.
Well,
I know what you want to ask next, but go ahead.
What do I want to ask next?
Walk and talks.
No, I mean, I think just to unpack that, like, to be clear, neither myself or you would ever tell anybody, any consumer I ever work with, ever, to waive an inspection. I believe the same thing. I think that everybody should have the opportunity to inspect anything if that's what they choose. It's really tough right now because we have such an inventory problem that sellers are really sitting in a really good spot where they don't have to, they don't have to be open to that, because somebody, like, not only is this a market where there's low inventory, but it's a market where both buyer and seller are taking on risks. if a seller chooses to allow a buyer to do a home inspection, they risk that buyer walking away because of maybe what they find. And then they own that report and they are obligated by PA, Pennsylvania Association, to disclose that all the defects. And I don't think that's a bad thing, but it is a risk they are taking on. And if that consumer decides to waive that inspection as one of the tools that they have to be competitive, whether they want to do that or not, they take on the risk of absorbing some crazy defects with a property. And at the end of the day, I still think personally, I still think both people are taking on a lot of risk because, to your point about what you said earlier, the lawsuits between buyers and sellers are really, you know, I don't have as much information as you do, but it's really tough when you are a seller and somebody goes to point the finger at you. You haven't had a home inspector in between you and that buyer. And that's a hard pill to swallow. So I think it's, look, at the end of the day, my goal is always to help people get to the goal. Sometimes that's, I need to get the house. Sometimes it's, I want a house, but I'm always going to have an inspection or a mortgage or whatever it is. And don't even get me started on insurance. That's a whole different thing. But, you know, in an effort to be collaborative, in an effort to be savvy and to help clients get to their goal, you know, you've been instrumental in giving my clients another option that we have more or less coined as a walk-in talk inspection, which is, you know, hey, Bill, this house is going to sell in 3 hours. Do you want to come to this property to give my clients a possible competitive edge that they can then, like I said before, I try to give all my clients as much information as possible so they can make as the best decisions for them as possible. And that inspection is with the permission of the homeowner, of course, can look like the following. Bill Dare meets you at the house and we have a nice chat. Sometimes you're Uncle Bill.
Right. I've been Uncle Bill a few times.
Yeah, yes. But what does a walk-in talk consist of?
It was brought into necessity. We as an industry, we don't really care for them.
Okay.
However, to your point, sometimes it's all we can get.
Right.
And it's better than nothing.
Yes.
So a walk-in talk is going to be an inspector attending a showing with you. Typically, we're limited in time to a half an hour, 45 minutes, maybe an hour on a good day. And we're not going to be ripping into the electric panel or the heater or climbing into the attic. But it's at least something to say, I've been in the house, I smelled something that didn't smell right, or something's off on this house. Because a good home inspector that's done this a lot doesn't need to necessarily go everywhere to start to get a sense.
Yeah.
Is this house off the rails? So it's not great. We're looking for water intrusion in
right.
the basement. We're looking for any evidence of staining. We're looking for potential for mold, which is in very many houses.
Yeah, yeah, it's everywhere.
And we're also answering questions, you know, how big the electric panel is, and, you know, is there a generator and how, what does that entail? So there's a lot we can do, but there's a lot we can't do. So it's
right.
not in any way, shape, or form a home inspection.
No.
The state of Pennsylvania defines a home inspection is a very specific thing, which we were talking about earlier, looking for material defects done
right.
by somebody that's qualified.
Right. Right. And I would say, like, you know, another way to describe it is kind of like a red flag inspection. You're looking at all the things that could be on that list of more expensive repairs. You can get a pretty good view of a roof on a good day. And like you were saying, the water, which is sneaky, that water will come in anywhere. So yep. I always love an inspection on a rainy day because then you really know.
Water always wins, I say.
So have you been doing a lot more of them?
We have. It's difficult on a number of fronts because it's usually trying to thread the eye of a needle from a scheduling standpoint.
Ugh, I know.
And, you know, you have to have we'd prefer to not be Uncle Bill. We prefer to be fully upfront about it, that we're coming in. We're not going to be doing a full home inspection. We do it under contract with our buyer.
Right.
And we also issue a report, which I think is important. What we generally know is we don't really want the seller to necessarily get any of this information. Not because we don't want to tell them that, but we don't want to make this is the whole idea of this is to prevent the seller from, you know, saying I don't want this because I don't want to know about
well,
this.
Well, but you know what? And it is a tricky thing. So in this, yeah, in the state of Pennsylvania, you know, any seller that obtains a report, must send, just set report, but this is not really report worthy. Like, this is more or less just having a contractor come through a house, you know, really. But yes, of course. And in any situation, we're always very transparent about who's in and out of the house. And what's also interesting that I don't think people realize is, I love this one. Maybe you have some thoughts about this, but when it's like you show up for the inspection and your buyer's like, I brought the whole family.
Oh, my.
And here's this will get you. I'm cool with it. But the reality is there was a sneaky change in the agreement of sale that basically says the only people that are allowed present for a home inspection are the people whose names are on the contract. So, and this was because your uncle's cat's grandmother from Idaho, who's like good with handiwork, decided to make an appearance and then, you know, put something in an email, and that gets confusing as to like what people need to disclose and who's really allowed to be there. But it is a real thing. And I haven't had any issues with it, but it is in the contract. And if you were dealing with a savvy seller and they read that and then they see on their home camera that someone that shouldn't have been there is there, like, that's a problem.
We've had a number of issues.
Ooh, tell me more.
So
drama.
So the whole Ring doorbell camera has changed our industry, right? And right. One of my guys got in trouble. He was the situation was very tense at this house. He was doing drilling. So that's always a tense situation. Yeah, we're testing stucco. We're drilling holes in the house. And the owner and him were not getting along very well. And I guess he thought he was not being viewed, and he threw a tube of caulk across the front yard in anger. Not at anybody, or nobody got hurt, but you know, then there were 7 emails back and forth about my guy losing his cool in the front yard and all that stuff. But but we've had issues. I mean, I've been down in the basement in a very expensive house with a very expensive piano, people brought their kids, and all of a sudden I hear kids banging on this piano, and I can't get up the stairs fast enough. You know, I love kids. I have 2. Don't bring them to a home inspection. We've had people bring. The whole family comes in, they're bringing Dunkin' Donuts and they're bringing coffees, and the people are watching all this happen on the Ring doorbell, and the phone starts ringing all of a sudden, you know, like, what is going on at my house?
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to be remindful. This is not your house. You are a guest in somebody else's house. I need to look that, right? I want my guys. I love it when somebody calls me up and say, hey, I don't think the home inspection happened. Why? Because nobody was here. I'm like, perfect. Yeah. I don't want you to know I was there. I'm not trying to be secretive about it, but I want to be that discreet. That you don't know that I was there.
Yeah. I mean, and it gets overwhelming. And for any buyer that's having an inspection, I'm always happy to have people chime in and participate. And I think it's incredibly helpful when someone's like, oh, I have a really great contractor. Can they come? I have a really good, so-and-so. Anybody that's licensed is allowed to be at the inspection outside of being a home inspector. If you are a licensed person or your name is on the actual agreement of sale. And I think that's really helpful. However, if you start bringing your designer and your paint guy, like, it can be really overwhelming. And the point of being at an inspection is for the home inspection.
That's the problem. It's distractive, right?
It can get distracted.
Focus on one thing. You'll have, if you've got a good home inspection going on and the house has any kind of complexity to it whatsoever, you'll be busy.
Yes.
There'll be enough for you to keep you occupied just getting through the home inspection, and then the rest of the stuff is schedule another visit to go in and measure for curtains and whatnot, because you're going to miss so much of the home inspection by trying to do too many things at once. And it's so critical because I wish every client of mine read my report from the title page to the last page.
And how long are your reports?
20, 30, 60 pages. The most recent was
60 pages. I've definitely gotten ones that are longer, and I read them. I read them all.
So, but you're the exception, not the rules.
Well,
let's be real. But I don't think that they necessarily do. And if it didn't get covered, if they didn't hear it at the home inspection, they may not catch the fact that while the roof is not a material defect, you're budgeting for one in the next 5 years.
Right.
And then 4 years from now, they're like hit blindsided and they're calling me. And I'm like, it says right in your report, you know, but they didn't, because let's be real. When you're buying a house, I haven't done this. I've been in my house for 34 years, but I've bought and sold dozens and dozens of houses over the years from flipping and whatnot. But you've got a lot going on in your life with filing for, you know, trying to get a loan or bum money off your parents for the house or whatever you're doing, you know, insurance and moving companies and figuring out where your stuff's going to go. There's just a lot in your life right then and there. Take a break, spend 2 hours or so with your home inspector, make sure you understand what it is he wants to get across to you, and then go on to the other things.
So then once they get the report, what should they be doing with that report?
Well, the best person that you're going to have on your in your camp then would be your agent, right? A good agent is going to work through that report with you, because it's not my job to say that the seller should take care of this or not take care of this. I don't know what the real. So some deals are as is, some deals, you know, if, for example, if the house was, you know, $900,000 and you got them to come down $100,000, I don't know that. But I think that that plays into the conversation. Like, maybe you kind of take care of some of this stuff on your own because you got such a good deal in a house or didn't get it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's where the agent comes in. The agent says, I understand the deal far better, because the home inspector is not going to, doesn't know or care what all the nuances of the contract are.
Sure.
I'm just focused on the house. And then a good agent's going to get together with their buyer. And they're going to go over the report. They're going to say, what stuff bugs you? What stuff doesn't? A good agent like you is going to be at the report, at the inspection, excuse me.
Of course.
So they're going to know what was, and the conversation is pretty fluid at that point because both people were there. Everybody knows what was said and what needs to be said. And then if it gets more complicated than that, the agent's going to call up and say, hey, Bill, can you jump on a call? And so we can ask you questions and do it very, to your point earlier, much earlier, transparent, right? We want to, nobody's trying to hide anything from anyone. That's just ends up with problems for all of us. So I think that that process is best regulated by the agent.
Yep.
Once we get beyond, they have a report in their hand.
And I always stress, we're looking for material defects. Unless you're buying a new construction house, no house is going to be perfect. So it shouldn't expect to be perfect. And you hopefully have made an offer on the property and the condition it was in. And now you're going to maybe figure out what the next steps look like based off of some new information. Okay, we get this great report. Tell me what are like the three biggest red flags in a house that you see or that a buyer should be like looking out for.
So it's going to be dictated a little bit by the age of the house.
Okay.
So, you know, we segment houses pre-depression, you know, post-depression, because there weren't very many houses built during the depression. So,
right.
So before 1930, you're going to be dealing with the potential for knob and tube. You're going to deal with the potential almost certainly of asbestos.
What's knob and tube?
Knob and tube's a good question. So knob and tube's the first wiring system that we had. It was a really good wiring system. It's 20 amp. It's soldered connections. It's really good.
Nice.
Except for the fact that now it's 70, 80, 100 years old.
Fire hazard.
Yes. And the insulation's falling off. And I, if you go on our website, we have some pictures of where knob and tube, everybody for the last 100 years has just been tying wires onto it. And so it's run its course. When I first got into this business, we would kind of let knob and tube slide if it was really well installed and it was only serving lights and stuff like that. We've kind of gone past that now.
Sure.
We're like, yeah, enough of the knob and tube. I'm sorry. If you've got it, you've got to get rid of it. So there's no ground wire. So you can't have a three-pronged outlet that's properly grounded. And it has a lot of potential problems with insulation. You know, like if you insulate your attic with knob and tube, there's a lot of issues with it.
So the top three, knob and tube.
In a pre-depression house.
Pre-depression house.
You're going to be dealing with almost certainly dealing with knob and tube, asbestos, and lead-based paint.
And how do we take care of all of them?
So it's different now. Lead-based paint anymore, we just say keep it in good condition, right? There's no, you know, you're not going to be removing lead-based paint from a house. You do more damage than good in doing that. So we just
paint over it, encapsulate it.
Right. We want to get it, you know, any loose paint needs to be dealt with professionally so you're not creating lead dust. And then paint it over.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep the paint in good shape.
Right.
The asbestos is problematic in that it comes in several forms. So most of us are familiar with the asbestos siding, which is called a product called Transite. So the asbestos is actually bedded in concrete. Nobody's real worried about that because it's not friable. It's not what they call friable or easily airborne. And there's some asbestos tiles, you know, the small square tiles can contain asbestos. But again, even the EPA says on those things, just keep them in good condition. You know, don't chew them up, don't grind them up, and you'll be fine. The one that everybody really gets, the one that I have the most concern of, is the pipe insulation and the duct insulation.
Right, right, of course.
So that stuff is, you know, the big, looks like corrugated, it looks like cardboard around a pipe with cloth around it. It's bright white. And then they have some that looks like paper on ductwork and things like that. That stuff is very easily friable and not overly easy to get rid of and kind of expensive. So pre-depression, that's kind of the top three that we deal with. Mold's going to run the gamut across all of it. Although the pre-depression houses are the wood and building materials pre-1950 don't get mold. It's amazing. They just don't get moldy.
Brick, man.
And the anything newer, anything from the 70s on up, you know, is just more prone to have mold. And so it's unusual, I will say, for us to find a house without mold somewhere. And we got into mold testing and all this because I got so tired of mold guys going crazy on these houses. It's like, look, mold's everywhere. You're breathing it right now, right? Unless you're in a hermetically sealed hospital operating room, you're dealing with mold. And I just want to make sure it's not growing excessively in a house. A little bit of mold, we find it a lot under the stairs in the basement.
Yeah.
Or where the basement, if there's drywall in the basement where it touches the floor behind it, things like that. So anywhere that you've got moisture or elevated humidity, you've got the potential for mold.
Right.
So mold is kind of runs the gamut, but it's definitely more in more modern houses. And if you're less than 5 years old, you're probably not dealing with it just because the house hasn't aged out enough to really start to experience it. So we discussed pre-depression. Now, post-depression up until about the 1960s, you're dealing with lead-based paint, you're dealing with, potential for aluminum, solid core aluminum wire, which was pretty prevalent in like the late 60s, early 70s. Okay. That's been problematic. Now, Philly is different in that, so we operate in Philly and North Delaware and all the way out in the suburbs, all the way out to Lehigh Valley and out to Reading. And we don't see a lot of aluminum wire in Philly. It was really prominent because all the Philly stuff was built so long ago and renovated, you know, and so when you get it in a lot of houses that were built in like the late 60s, early 70s.
Right, right.
So we don't have a lot of that in Philly.
Interesting.
So I know you're more Philly centric.
Philly mainline, yeah.
Yeah. So then in that whole mid-century kind of house, you know, you've got aging things, but the wood was so amazing back then, the structural wood and the trim wood. My house is 230 years old. And I got a piece of wood in the back of my house. It's stone. It's outside, right? Not covered with anything. Yeah. And it's not painted. It's been there for 230 years. It used to be a roof attached to it way before I ever bought the house 34 years ago. And there's not an ounce of rot on that thing anywhere.
That's amazing. Right?
Embedded in stone. You walk up to a three-year-old house and look at the bottom of the doors, you know, and it's all rotted out, the brick mold and, you know, the bottoms. Now they've changed. Some of the door manufacturers are actually now the bottom 5 or 6 inches of the door frame is actually a different composite material.
Yes. Like to get away from that. Yeah.
So, you know, so that's what's changed. And we could have a whole building science thing conversation, but that's a whole nother podcast.
Thing. Yeah.
So, and then newer houses, what we're dealing with a lot, anything built in the last 30 or 40 years, you're just looking at moisture intrusion behind siding, whether it's stucco, brick, stone, vinyl, cement board, misinstalled siding. The cement board siding that they use today is potentially installed poorly in a lot of cases. We've got, in Philly, you've got a lot of flat roofs, which can be problematic. And they're hard to trace sometimes, you know. Nothing scares me more than walking into a house and it's all freshly painted, right? Now I'm terrified, right? I'm like, what did this look like 6 weeks ago? How many ceiling stains existed before they painted this thing?
Yeah.
So, I think that the challenge in a lot of these houses in the mid to, you know, coming up in there is, you know, the house wasn't built with air conditioning, for example.
Right, right.
Right. So the ductwork was designed for heat. Well, heat goes up real easy, doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
But AC doesn't go up easy.
No, you're right. That's a very good point.
So now you've got a 4-story high house in Philly that has this tiny little ductwork and you're trying to shove cold air from the basement all the way to the, and it's never as cool up there as you're going to want it to be. These are some of the, and it's hard to figure out as a home inspector, because if it's not hot the day you're there.
There you go.
What do you know, right?
Well, yeah.
I can just say that the ductwork was originally designed for heat and it hasn't been redesigned for AC. And what do I know?
Well, your agent will tell you it's going to be hot up there. I already know.
Right. There you go.
Unless you have two zones, it's going to be hot on that third floor. Yeah, that's a really good, it's a really good overview. What do you see? What do you predict for the future of the home inspection world?
I think that AI offers an interesting opportunity for, I'd like to be a pioneer in this, but
me too. Let's go.
I think that it gives you the ability at some level to self-inspect to a certain level. Right?
Oh, cool.
So if you went through a house with the right app and took a, like if AI can tell me who you are and show me every picture of you ever put online, right? Why can't it say that the water heater is not installed right in the pressure relief valve pipe is too short, right? If I take a picture of it.
That's a really good point.
So AI is going to jump in at some point and enable a consumer to take a picture of a problem. Okay. And there will be enough data out there for the AI to say that here's the problem with that. And for the home inspector, which we already tinker with this a little bit, we let AI maybe rethink our thought process to clean up our comments some. So the AI piece of this for doing inspections at some level. Now, obviously, the consumer is not going to climb on a roof typically. They're not going to climb in the attic. Yeah, stay off the roof, please. Yeah,
don't. I hate the attic. I hate when they pull down the stairs. It makes me so nervous.
Yeah, no. And all the dust comes down all over the clothes.
You get a pissed off homeowner. It's not good.
It's lovely. I pay for more carpet cleans than I'd like to count, you know, because there's a footprint after.
Oy.
But the, I think that, stay out of the electric panel. There's not a lot about a home inspection I can talk about that'll kill you, but that's one of them. So stay out of the electric panel. But there's a lot of things that you could do as a consumer to educate yourself about a house or about a problem. When I'll be 65 years old this month, right?
Mazel.
Happy birthday. My kids can't even understand. My kids are young. They can't even understand that there was a day when you didn't have internet or cell phone and all this stuff. And to be able to Google something from your hand is like mind blowing.
Yeah.
So the level of information is staggering. I'm going to give you my caution that I give everybody. It's Bill's rule of three. You got to find three idiots out there saying the same thing because there's always one that's clueless. Or call your home inspector. Just call your home inspector. So I think AI is going to change a lot about life in general.
Yeah, of course.
But I think that in the inspection industry, it's going to change it. I think that thermal imaging has been a boon for the home inspection industry. I worry about thermal imaging cameras used to be 10, 15, 100 grand, right? And it was limiting. It was self-limiting. So your Dewey Cheatham and Howell home inspector didn't run out and buy a thermal camera. We've had one forever, but now you can get a decent thermal camera for $700.
You know, it's so interesting you say that. So I wanted to ask you, what are the tools that you use, that you rely on every inspection? And that's one of them.
I think that a good inspector should come equipped to do almost anything within reason. We're not allowed to be destructive, right? I can't cut a hole in anything.
Yeah, no holes unless you have a permission of some sort. And it's really necessary.
Right. So I think every home inspector should walk into a house with a flashlight, a screwdriver, a moisture meter, and a thermometer, right? That is the absolute bare minimum to walk into a house with.
If your home, thermal.
Just a regular moisture meter.
Moisture meter. And you said a thermometer?
And a thermometer, right? Because we have to do a differential temperature read on the heater.
Yes, but that.
I think that a good home inspector, an exceptional home inspector, walks in with a thermal imaging because they have pocket ones now that are adequate.
Yeah.
That you need. So am I going to thermal the whole house? No, more than likely not. But I want to do vaulted ceilings, skylights, basements, because a lot of things show up on that that's really interesting. But I do worry about people that are untrained, that don't understand it, right? Yeah. So in my life as a consultant, I get a lot of other reports to review. And it's concerning to me sometimes what I get to read in these reports, how it was misinterpreted or misunderstood what they saw. So they took a thermal image and then they misinterpreted it and created a problem or didn't create a problem that should have been created.
That's really interesting.
So having somebody so level one is like the minimum for a thermographer. So level one thermographer. So if you've got somebody using a thermal camera, ask them what their thermography certification is.
Huh. Yes, because, you know, like, I don't have any of these fun tools because I'd abuse all of them. And I have to stay in a lane. Like, I'm a real estate agent. I don't have any sort of certificates to allow me to operate heavy machinery like you do. But I think that, yeah, the curious buyer, the curious parent, the curious, you know, general consumer. And I think what people have to really remember is you are not the expert. And let's let the expert be the expert, do their job so you can actually get really good information. Because in a day and age where there's so much information, it can be really easy to create a situation that's not real or to misinterpret information that actually is problematic.
I find they look at it, see the problem and don't understand the problem. Well, and it goes unreported because they didn't understand what it was they're looking at.
I mean, yes. I mean, like, I've delivered stucco reports. I've delivered pool inspections. I've delivered radon testing. And I always follow up with, if you have questions, call the inspector.
Right.
Let's walk through it with you so you understand what this information is.
Right. But we don't want you going out on that limb. And that's
because, I do not.
Because let your home inspector swing on a noose. We have a defensive agent course that we teach. So
oh,
for
really?
Real
that's
estate
cool.
agents, when they're kind of new in the business. And one of the things we say is, like, don't correct the home inspector. If he says something that's totally stupid and wrong, you might be questioning him offline, but you never want to go against a home inspector on site, because if you're wrong and your client believes you and doesn't believe the home inspector, some of the biggest problems that have occurred just because of that. So
yeah.
let your home inspector be an idiot, whatever he's going to do or say, but and question him offline separately. And I give you some strategy if you think a home inspection going off the rails. Because a lot of times what happens is we go in and we say, hey, look, they notched the beam and that's a structural concern. Well, if you don't take that to the next point in conversation and say it's a $400 fix,
right,
the client's going, it's a structural problem. The house is falling down.
Yeah.
So as an agent, if you're watching that happen and you don't hear the person, you don't hear the inspector say the next line, which is, hey, it's bad, but it's not that bad.
Right.
You could say, hey, have you seen that before? Well, yeah, I saw it six times this week. Well, okay. So how much does it cost to fix? Like $300 or $400. Oh, okay, good. Now you put it in, you can help bring the inspector to the point, because you're going to be paying attention to your client way more than I can necessarily pay attention
to
them.
Sure. And yeah, I mean, listen, I think there's always an opportunity after the fact. And this is like a really heavy lift, but really important part of the process is you get that report. I always ask, okay, like, what are our biggest concerns? You know, what are you going to tell me might need further inspection? And you guys are really good at saying, I'd bring in a roofer or an electrician or the plumber. Those are usually the three that kind of come up. Maybe there's a waterproofer in there. And we go and let them be the expert if it says, like, further evaluation needed of some extent.
But I think a good inspector is kind of couching all that to say, you know, look, if you want to know every last detail about this, bring in this expert or bring in this person.
Right.
But I think a good home inspector is going to be able to tell you the roof is, you know, 38 years old and it's only a 30-year roof and it's going to need to be replaced. You may bring a roofer in to get a price.
Right.
But I'm going to tell you that it's about $15,000 to $30,000 or whatever. We'll give you, you know, again, we're trying to give you as much data as we reasonably can at the inspection, because I've seen reports where the guy goes in, he says, okay, bring an electrician to look at the electrical panel, bring in a plumber to look at the plumbing, bring in an HVAC guy to look at the HVAC, bring in a roof. And I'm like, why did we hire you? Why don't we just bring all these guys in? If that's what you're going to tell me, like, everything, there's always going to be the potential that one expert needs to be brought in. We need more data. But generally speaking, a good home inspector should be able to get you through most of that without a whole line of people following him around the building going, you know, this is what I see here.
Yeah, I agree. No, you guys do a great job of that. Is there anything else? I'm trying to think if there's anything else I want to ask you. Is there anything else you think is important to chat about when it comes to home inspection?
I think that as a person that sits in court between buyers and sellers, and I've defended sellers and I've gone after sellers, and, you know, you're hired as a gun to do what you're supposed to do, is that a home inspector in the equation is an enormous insulator for you as a seller, right? You don't understand it maybe, but if you allow a home inspection, then if there's a problem after the fact, they're going to call the home inspector. They're going to complain to him and he's going to have his own, you know, resources to deal with the problem. If you're, but if somehow the buyer can somehow convince the system that they were somehow because nobody's, it was never their idea to waive the inspection, right? It was always, you know, I felt pressured to do it and whatnot. So the home inspector in that process is a huge insulator, whether it's a pre-listing inspection and as a seller, you're getting the inspection done so that you can present that. And remember, as a seller, you don't have to fix a thing. You're just required to disclose it. The roof could be caving in and you just disclose it to the seller that this is my inspection report. And so putting a home inspector in there, and I'm not talking about a walk and talk, I'm talking about a legitimate home inspection, is a huge insulator to allow somebody else to jump in between the two parties and say, I'm the guy that did the inspection. If there's a problem, see me.
Yeah. I think that's really good advice. Who knows what the market will... what the market has in tail for us this year. We'll see. Hopefully there'll be some more inventory.
I think it's going to take a while for that to square
itself. I think it'll take a little while too. But no, this was great. The biggest question that I have that so many people probably want to know, what's the craziest thing you've seen in a home inspection? I want to hear about some crazy shit.
Well, the craziest was someone had perished in the house. And was there for a hot minute. They weren't there when I got there.
Oh my God.
But you knew where they were.
Oh.
You know where they had been laying for a bit. It was sad.
Boy.
It was really sad.
That's
because
so sad.
Nobody was paying attention to that person. And so anyway, that was the craziest thing. You know, it was a very special house. That wasn't the only problem. But toilets full. I mean, literally full.
Oh.
Because people, when a house gets really bad, right, when it's going through repossession and all that stuff, they turn off the plumbing and electric. And so, yeah, I mean, I've seen my share of duty in toilets.
Of shit-filled toilets.
Yes, to the top, right?
To the
brim. How did it get there? What do you got to do to fill it that full?
A lot of Taco Bell.
That's crazy. Hoarders are always fun. You get the path, you know, through the house, the little narrow path, and you're like, what can I inspect? You know, the boxes of trash. It's an interesting business. I'm ADHD. I love being out and about. Sitting at my desk for 8 hours at a time is insane. I love walking into a house and just going, what is going to be here today?
Man, I think the craziest thing I saw, we'll keep it PG today, but this was like 2011 and I was showing houses in Manayunk to an investor. And this was like when bank owned properties were really rampant and people were, you know, people were squatting and I'm in this like cute dress and I'm trying to impress this client. I just had started this, you know, new career and I walk in and I am like, it's like wet inside. There's fucking trash up to my knees. And then out of this trash filled room pops out a dude named Joe who fully announces himself and he is butt ass naked. And I am with like a crew of like men, like they are like investors from New York that are going to tap into Philly. Right. And they've like entrusted me to help them. And I'm like, do you guys like it?
What do you think, Joe? So what can you tell us about the house?
Do you guys buy it? I think Joe comes with the property. Like, cool. And I was like, you know, they had I didn't know what was going on. I was like, I call like one of my, you know, like mentors. I was like, what happened? Like, what's happening? She's like, Stephanie, like these people, they don't live in the house. Like, you know, and had to explain to me like what happens when you are pissed off, you get evicted from your house and you know, then people come in and they rip out the copper and copper pipes. You've got water. It was like a whole thing. They did not buy anything.
They went back to New York.
And I was like, okay, I don't know about this as a career. What are we going to do?
I'm going to get carry permit quick.
Right. I was like, so where to next? And like that whole day was pretty funny. But, you know, I think it's like it's a testament too to like to real estate and to the evolution of real estate and the evolution of buying and the process. And I think like it is in some cases just it. You have to have, I always say this, you have to have a plan. You just have to know what you're willing to do if you want to have success, what that looks like, how to protect yourself, what conversations you need to have, how to be really prepared if you really want a house. Maybe one with trash with Joe.
Or full toilets.
This was so wild. I was so shook because I was like, new. No. I was like, this is crazy. Like, I can't believe people do this. Obviously, hundreds of homes sold later and things are a little different. But anyway,
anything? Not as many make it people popping out these days.
No, but I have had like once. Oh, God. While we're on this. So I like at one year I like sold. I had a really awesome client. He's a great friend. Really, really just like super cool, successful guy. And he was a home builder, but also an investor in the city. And he owned a ton of units at Temple University. And I was like the queen of Temple. I think I sold like 52 homes that year or something. And like 20 of them were these like Temple, crazy Temple rentals that were like lived in by like the crew team and like the track team. And I was like, cool, played lacrosse. Like, but they were gross. You know, they were gross. And like, there was all sorts of crazy shit. And like, these girls had like pet rats and they were just like, they were so disgusting. And I was like, I can't. I was like, girls, you need like a new hobby. This is gross. And we sold a lot of them. They were great. They were like a 10 cap. I mean, he was just restructuring. But for everybody who thinks that real estate for us and Bill is going to fancy lunches and negotiating $1 billion deals. No, I have like for sure had to carry a rat out of a fucking cage. And I'm like, okay, this, nobody should inspect this house. I mean, we had inspections on this house and it was wild. And I think there is a picture of a rat in the inspection report.
We've got tons of dead squirrels and dead birds.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
no,
yeah.
That's crazy.
I mean, there are so many wild, funny situations. And then I've had my fair share of people like, you're not allowed in here. And I'm like,
oh, yeah.
Who are you? Like, okay. And you know, and it's we are all trying to do our best. I got like the other day I was showing a property to some clients of mine in Ardmore, and this house was needed a lot of work. And so I'm there and I see a car and the door's open, and like as part of my fiduciary responsibility is to protect my clients before they go into any house. So like if any door is open, I should, you know, there's a protocol, right? And so I knock on the door and I'm like, "Hi," like I do my very embarrassing realtor call. I'm like, "Hi, real estate agent. Is anybody here?" And I get like, I'm like kind of spooked because there's definitely somebody there. I don't know who it is. And I see there's like all this home inspection stuff. And I'm like, but the house wasn't under contract, so I don't really know. It was a walk and talk, I guess. And I was met with so much resistance by everybody. And I was like, "Hi," like I basically was just making sure they weren't going to like murder me and my clients. Right. I was like, "I just want to know, are you allowed to be here?" And everybody was also wearing masks. So I was like, I am a little confused here. And then like, finally, this nice home inspector was like, no, like we're doing a home inspection. I was like, "Okay, just checking." And she was like, "I don't know why you need to be so intrusive." I was like, "Listen, lady, like my client's carrying her newborn. Like, what do you want from me? Like, I'm just trying to be nice." I don't know why I'm sharing all this today on the podcast, but snow day got me good. So home inspections, wild times. But yes, I think everybody should have a home inspection. I am curious to know if that law that is passed, what, Massachusetts?
Yes.
We'll pass here because no homeowner is going to agree to that shit. How can the state
But that's why the state stepped in.
Well, how can the state dictate how people use? What if someone was like, "You have to sell your stock now"?
The point was that they're not mandating that you have an inspection. They're mandating that you cannot preclude someone from buying your house by telling them they can't have one. So there'll be transactions even in Massachusetts that occur without a home. And let's put the risk factor in line, right? If somebody buying a $2 million house, do whatever you got to do, right? Because if they find a $2,000, $10,000 problem, they're still vacationing in the south of France.
No, I push back on that. I don't think that's true. I think my clients who are now at the $3 million mark are changing their lifestyle because they... And I know this is so not a problem, but really to unpack this
first world problem.
Well, but I really think that it's a different conversation because I think what we think in our minds that if somebody has $3 million or $2 million to spend on a house, it means that they can afford a $50,000 project. But I'm watching it happen. That is not the case. They are inching their price point up because they just lost out on the 1.8. And to get the next house, this is what it takes. And, I don't know if that's true anymore. I would say yes, overall, sure. But it's bananas.
It is crazy. But generally speaking,
Above
$1 million, the buyer may, you know, has somebody to lean on, right? You take somebody that's buying a $200,000 townhouse that needs help, and they waived inspections and find out the heater doesn't work and the roof is leaking. I find them to be a little bit more distressed about it than somebody that maybe has more resources.
Sure.
Nobody wants to pay money after they buy a house to fix something that they didn't know about.
Yep.
I get it. Whether you're,
it doesn't matter what house, what number, what price point.
But I'm saying that the person that is sub $500,000, generally speaking, in my experience, has been more impacted negatively by the waiving inspections because they didn't know what they didn't know, and a lot of them don't have the resources to take care of it. So it's more problematic to me from what I'm seeing.
Yeah, right?
And we inspect, you know, $2 million, $3 million, $10 million houses, and we inspect $250,000 houses.
Right.
So we see the full run.
We see the gamut.
But the waiving inspections thing is, and I agree,
sucks.
I'm biased, right? Because this is what I do.
Oh, that's okay. But you're allowed to be.
But it was a lot nicer when it was middle of the road market, right? You know, where we had decent amounts of inventory that, you know, a buyer and a seller had to come to kind of terms without one person lording it over the other. I don't like the market to be in either, because sometimes it's a buyer's market, right? I don't particularly care for that either, because the buyers are beating people over the head with the home inspection report saying, I want every last thing fixed. Well, that was never the design of a home inspection to fix everything.
Right.
So, I mean, I like the middle of the road market. I think everybody pretty much does.
Yeah, of course.
And, but this is the market we're dealt right now. Yeah. And I hope that it changes.
10 years.
But it's going to take a while.
10 years.
Yeah. Because we got to go through the next interest rate cut, right? Where the interest rates come down, and that's going to drive more people in and out of the housing market. It's, you know, you got to go through all that evolution. You got to take people like me that are sitting on a sub 3% interest rate and get me to the point, well, I'm not going anywhere. I'm still have kids in college.
Do you want to sell your house, Bill?
No.
I know a good agent.
Yes. You know what I'd have to do to sell my house? I would have to have a roulette wheel with every agent I know on it and do a live stream.
Oh, don't worry. I'll call them all and tell them you hired me. It's fine.
How could I possibly pick a real estate agent to sell my house? It's probably one of the
easy,
more interesting things.
Just kidding.
I deal with so many great agents, and
I know.
You among them, obviously.
Thank you. That is a funny thing. I mean, at the end of the day, it is hard. It is hard for people to truly figure out how to have success, and that's why we are here. I'm here to tell you what the process looks like, so you can make good decisions. And you're here for my clients, and I'm so lucky to have you, because I really do torture you. I call you at hours that no one should get phone calls.
Oh, it's all good.
But it's because my clients need it and they really appreciate it. And you have single-handedly been the reason why people have been so successful over the last several years. So thank you.
Thank you.
And if anybody is interested in learning more about Bill, I will leave his contact info, website, email, all that good stuff in the show notes. Can I say that? I think that's a cool thing to say. I think that's what people say. Spotlight Home Inspections. Thank you. You're the best. I appreciate it.
I appreciate being here. Thank you, Steph.
Young John!